We know now that in the early part of the 21st century, the art form known as the radio play was declared legally dead by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. With infinite complacence, Canadians carried on without a whimper or tear, isolated from a collective listening experience by the solitude of their own playlists. But even as their own audio experience grew inward, a new, unnamed project was growing outward, picking up the last echoes of radio's death knell and transcoding its waves into ones and zeros to carry it on into the future. A project conceived by postmodern Dr. Frankensteins aiming to reanimate the dead with new technology. Part comedy, part drama, part something-something. The Indescribables originate their immutable creations in a black box operating theater and unleash them across the globe. With no consistent description from witnesses, they are known only as Radio Project X. Stand by for project initiation. Divert all power to the main podcast servers and maximize bandwidth. Fire up the flux capacitor. Bandwidth maximum and flux capacitor is fluxing. Supercharge the theremin. We're going live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right then, Stephanie. Why don't we see if you can't pull up your socks in time for the exam and we'll go from there. I'll see you in the lab on Thursday.
Thanks, Professor Ebor. Oh, I'm sorry.
Pardon me.
Ah, John, is that you out there? Come in, come in.
Sorry, I'm late, Professor Ebor.
Just fine, my boy, just fine. John, I have exciting news.
Is that why you wanted to see me, sir?
Yes, indeed. Mr. Laidlaw, your internship here at the university is almost done, is that right?
Yes, sir.
You've really excelled in your research, and I'm proud to have been your teacher.
Thank you, Professor. Any achievements I've made are in no small part thanks to you. Everything I've learned along the way has come, in one way or another, from your teaching.
Not everything, John. Your dissertation on the nature of esoteric envisioning has me very intrigued.
It has?
Most certainly. Tell me more about your theory.
Well, I believe, as you know, that vision should play a large part in the life of the awakened man, not to be regarded as infallible, of course, but to be observed and then used as a guidepost to possibilities.
Excellent, John, excellent. And have you documented your experiments on the subject?
Well, sir, visions come from a region of the consciousness where scientific methods like experiment and observation are impossible. But I don't feel that means they should be casually dismissed. Of course, they should be checked by reason afterwards, but I believe that all our best knowledge has come as sudden revelations, just as subconscious visions are sudden revelations to the brain that is prepared to receive them. Prepared, that is, by hard work and concentration.
But it is a process, nonetheless, of spiritual illumination.
Yes, sir, I suppose so, sir.
I agree with you.
You do?
Wholeheartedly. Being a scientist does not preclude being a mystic. It may seem unsuitable to others in my field, but I myself simply cannot deny the very real possibility and plausibility of the supernatural.
The supernatural? But doesn't that sound unscientific? Especially coming from someone who has attained such greatness within the scientific community.
Even the keenest minds, and in the right sense of the word, are hopelessly unscientific, as you call it. John, ever since my youth, I have, in intervals, been receiving a vision. A vision that outlines in detail man's predestined union with God. The future of the human race.
You have, sir.
It's glorious, John, glorious. And the vision will not be denied. I may risk academic disgrace in sharing it with you. I feel I simply must tell someone about it. I suspect you might be my man, even when you were a student here. But after reading your latest dissertation, I'm sure of it.
I'm all ears, Professor.
Only last night, the vision came to me again. It's the tablets of the gods, John, lying hidden somewhere in the sand.
Tablets of the... Professor, it's... It's... Why, it's incredible.
And I am to be the one to find them and give their great knowledge to the world.
Even if it were true, the world would not believe you.
But is it not likely that God's messengers in the distant ages should have given to his creatures some full statement of the meaning of life and death or the secret of the soul? Is it not probable that God would give his creation an explanation of our being here and a record of what great destiny we are bound to fulfill in the ultimate fullness of things?
But you're a man of knowledge, Professor, and a profound investigator. Aren't the ultimate secrets said to be screened from all possible choices given
the ultimate secrets, yes. But I am convinced that there lies buried somewhere an indestructible record of the secret meaning of life, originally known to men in their early days, in our pristine innocence. And by this strange vision so often vouchsafed to me, I am equally sure that one day it should be given to me to announce this glorious message to the world.
I don't know what to say, Professor.
Say you'll come with me.
Come with you? Where?
On an expedition to Assyria. This summer, once you've finished your internship here and are ready for some serious research. An excavation in the remote civilization of what was once Chaldea may lead to the discovery of what I have so vividly been dreaming of, and I invite you to share it with me.
It sounds fascinating, Professor, but I'm afraid I'll have to respectfully decline.
Respectfully decline? You think me an old madman, is that it?
Not at all. I admire you more than any man in the world. It's simply that this summer I'm going to be married.
Married? I didn't know you'd found a girl.
Yes. Clara Witherspoon. She's a psychology major I met in the library.
And this great supernatural awakening, this is what you've discovered? You're in love? You'd give up the most significant explanation in the history of humanity for a pagan ritual and to play house?
Professor!
Forgive me, John. I apologize to you and to lovely Clara. I wasn't expecting to make this trip without you, and I guess I've betrayed my anxiety at the prospect. It wasn't fair. Well, I shall tell you and Mrs. John Laidlaw all about my pilgrimage when I return in the fall. Wait until I find these tablets of the gods, John. Wait till I hold the solution to the world's problems in my hands. Wait till the light of this new revelation breaks upon confused humanity and she wakes to find her bravest hopes justified.
The more you talk, Professor, the more I regret not being able to join you after all. Well, good luck. Professor! Professor Ibor, over here! Welcome home. I almost didn't recognize you. It's a good thing I spotted your white hair under your hat. Here you are at last.
Yes, John, here I am. A little older and much dustier than when you last saw me.
And much wiser, no doubt. And your luggage, where is that? I suppose you have tons of it.
Hardly anything. Nothing, in fact, but what you see.
Have you brought nothing home with you? No treasures?
This is all I have.
Then you didn't find them. I'm sorry, Professor. I know how convinced you were.
Oh, I found what I went to seek, John. The visions never once failed me. It led me straight to the place like a star in the heavens.
You mean?
Yes. I found the tablets of the gods.
And you brought them?
They're here in my portmanteau even now. I really must get to my laboratory, John. I'm anxious to start deciphering the inscription.
Inscription?
Yes. Cut upon their surface are markings of a curious character. Of course, they may be mere erosion, but I believe they are more likely faded hieroglyphics.
May I see them?
Not here, my boy, not now. There'll be plenty of time for that. Right now, I must return to my laboratory and complete the translation. Once I understand their message, then I will be able to share it, not only with you, but with everyone on this poor, patient, and suffering world. Quickly, let's hail a cab.
Oh. Hello?
John, it's Professor Ebor.
Professor? It's the middle of the night.
I'm very sorry, my boy, but I must talk to you.
But, Professor, I haven't talked with you or seen you in over a year. Not since picking you up at the train station.
I apologize, Jonathan, but it was necessary to sever all connections with you. I assure you it was for your own protection.
My protection?
Yes. I've not risked real interaction with you or anyone else since my return from Chaldea. That's why I closed my laboratory and had to withdraw from the university.
I have so many questions, Professor. What about the tablets of the gods? Did you ever manage to decipher them?
Yes, I'm afraid so. They are, alas, indestructible. Indestructible.
May I see them? You will let me know their message.
I'm dying, John.
Dying?
In a few minutes, I will be gone, and once I have passed away, you too, in your turn, must try, with the latest resources of science, to compass their utter destruction.
Professor, are you ill?
I must ask you not to refer to the subject to anyone. Not your wife, not the police, no one. I must beg you to keep my confidence. Absolutely.
Yes, Professor, I will, but...
Read them if you must, and if you can, destroy them. But never, never give them to the world.
Professor? Professor!
Don't dine on the professor's old papers by mistake, John.
But what's that, darling?
You've barely touched your lunch. What is it? You haven't been yourself for days.
I'm sorry, Clara. It's this whole sad business with Professor Ebor.
I know, darling. Your debt to Professor Ebor is incalculably great, but it's been over a year, a month, since he telephoned you, and naturally after the loss of a great friend.
But don't you see, Clara? He was more than just a great friend. He was a mentor to me. I revered and loved him. I practically worshipped him.
I understand, John, but you need to come to terms with the fact that he refused to see you or speak to you for over a year.
Exactly. Why the sudden change? Why would he turn his back on his lifelong work, on everything he'd ever held dear? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, John, it's not unusual for older people to change as they enter their twilight years.
But he didn't just change, Clara. He completely transformed. The usual glow of light and wonder completely abandoned his face. It was the swift decay of the greatest heart and brain I have ever known, and I was powerless to help.
Sometimes, when the mind goes, the victim's entire personality seems to crumble away.
When the mind goes? Are you suggesting that the professor was going senile?
Look, I know how much you cared for him, John, but you said yourself it was like watching the decay of his heart and brain.
His mental powers were as splendid as ever, Clara. He just seemed to lose the power to use them. Now, what did he discover in Chaldea that was of such terrible nature that it robbed his heart of courage and his soul of hope?
That sort of declension is common for people in his condition, John.
Condition?
You can't deny that all the symptoms were there. He grew detached, despondent, and delusional. A few months later, he was dead.
Delusional?
John, did you see his expedition plans before he left?
Well, no, we parted on uncomfortable terms, and I never got to see them. But there were several folders on his desk.
And the trip? Is there anyone that actually saw where he went? Does anyone know for certain where he was all that time?
Well, there must be. It's too absurd to suggest that...
Even if he did make the trip, what of his findings? These indestructible tablets of the gods? Has anything ever been seen or held by someone other than himself? I have a deep suspicion that these tablets existed only in his mind.
That's where you're wrong, Clara. Because I have the tablets of the gods in my study.
What?
They were bequeathed to me from Dr. Ebor. As you know, I am the executor and sole trustee of his estate. Well, among all the professor's belongings, I found a parcel, wrapped in brown paper and bearing my name.
What do these tablets look like? John. You're not afraid to open them up, are you? I'm sure the professor's sudden loss of hope has nothing to do with a pair of dusty old relics dug up in a desert 10,000 miles away.
I'm not sure what to think, Clara. All I know is that while Professor Ybor's body died a month ago, his spirit died more than a year ago, somewhere in the desert sands of Chaldea.
Oh, Alex, thank you for coming. I didn't know whom else to call.
Don't give it a second thought. What are neighbors for?
You're more than a neighbor, Alex. You're John's best friend.
How's he doing now?
Well, I'm afraid he's no better. He's still in the study. He's locked the door and won't stop shouting. It sounds as though he's destroyed everything inside it.
My word, should we call someone in an official capacity?
You mean the authorities? Oh, I couldn't bear to do that to John. Do you think you can at least try to get through to him first? As a doctor, I mean.
Well, one of the prerequisites of my particular area of psychoanalysis is having the patient in a relaxed state. I don't think I'll be of much use to him as a hypnotist this afternoon.
Well, then as a friend, Alex, help him as a friend.
What set him off?
Well, I'm not sure. He'd been in the study a long time, and when I went to knock on the door, I heard screaming and the sound of breaking glass. I tried to open the door, but it was locked, and John refused to open it.
Show me the study.
Over here. Here we are. Just through there is the study.
I say, John, it's Alex. I'm here with Clara, John. We want to help you.
Go away! You can't help me. There's no hope for anyone.
I don't like the sound of that. I better prepare an injection.
You think you'll need to sedate him?
I hope not, but he may be in danger to more than just the furniture at this point. 50 cc's, that should do it. You want to get better, don't you, John? At least open this door. You can't live in the study, old boy.
I don't want to live at all.
Listen to me, Clara. John's revolver. Do you know where it is?
No. Well, I suppose so. We always keep it locked up in the writing desk.
The writing desk?
Yes. In the study.
Stand back, Clara.
Alex, you fool!
Put that gun down, John!
No, you're too late. Let me go, Alex. Let go of me. Let me do this. You fool. Alex, why did you drug me? Why didn't you let me end it?
Not that way, old friend. There are easier ways than that. Whatever it is, there are easier ways to solve a problem.
Oh, John. Thank heavens you're all right.
Yeah, he's much better now, aren't you, John?
What have you done? You fool.
Clara, I wonder if you could perhaps leave the two of us alone for a moment.
You're sure he'll be all right?
Quite sure. John's my patient for the moment, and I'm afraid we'll need the privacy of the hypnotist sanctum. Stand that chair up for me before you go, would you, Clara? Up you go, John. That's better.
You will let me know if I can help, won't you? Goodbye, John.
Now, what's this all about, John?
Don't ask me that, Alex, please. Ask me no questions, for I have had a moment of merciless clairvoyance, absolutely clear vision. But I want no one else in the whole world to know what it is, least of all you, old friend.
I'm always at your service, John. As you know, you have only to tell me what I can do for you, and I will do it.
I've discovered something so terrible and yet so obvious that I can never forget it.
My dear Jonathan, nothing is easier.
I can hardly understand why it is not recognized by every mind in the world. What did you say?
If you surrender your will to me, I can heal you. You shall forget anything you wish.
You mean you can treat me hypnotically so I'll forget everything that has occurred in the last 2 hours?
Your memories of the last 2 hours shall be wiped as though they never had been.
But will they ever come back? Will I ever remember?
Certainly not.
Alex, you must make sure. You must suggest to me that I shall forget till the day I die. Until I die.
Yes, John. Just relax. I want you to stare at this coin and listen to the sound of my voice. Don't take your eyes off the coin, not even for a second. Good man. Now I want you to imagine yourself safely inside an impenetrable glass box where nothing can harm you. And start counting backwards, slowly, from 20.
20. 19. 18. 17. 16.
He's sleeping now. I don't think you need to worry any further, Clara.
Oh, Alex, how can we ever repay you?
I'm just glad John seems to be back to his old self again.
What happened? I just don't understand what came over him.
Well, the patient-doctor relationship is always one of confidence. But in this case, I don't really know much more than you do. Through a mental regression of hypnosis, I was able to ascertain some of the steps leading up to John's outburst, but little more.
Any light you can shed on the matter would be appreciated. You managed to hypnotize him.
He went off easily enough. A little obstinate at first, but though he came in like a lion, he went out like a lamb. I asked him. What were you doing in the study before I came here?
I was working my way through some paper when I got tired. I put my head down on the desk and I remembered the parcel inside with the initials M.E. on it.
Mark Ebor? Professor Mark Ebor?
Yes.
Did you open the parcel?
I did. I...
Go on, John.
I don't want to.
Why not?
I'm scared.
Try, John. What happened as you opened the package?
I heard a sound at the back of the room.
What sort of sound?
It was just as though someone had laughed.
Who was it that laughed, John?
No one. I was alone in the room. It must have been a case of nerves.
Why do you think you were nervous?
I wanted to open the parcel, but had already waited for a month to do so. All that curiosity about to be quenched in a single moment must have built up a considerable amount of nervous tension.
And did you open the parcel?
Yes. Damn me.
What was inside?
There were... The parcel was heavy.
What was inside the parcel, John?
There were a couple of weather-worn plaques of gray stone. They looked like stone, although they felt like metal.
What did you do next?
I laughed to think that someone believed they could squeeze the secrets of life and death into such broken lines as the engravings on those tablets. But then I noticed a yellow envelope laying beside them on the desk, with a single word on the outside. It was the professor's writing, neat and even.
What was the word?
Translation. I thought to myself, now to learn the meaning of the words, and why mankind was made, and why discipline, sacrifice, and pain are worthwhile, I tore open the envelope and read the professor's neat printing. I read it all from beginning to end, gorging my curiosity.
And then what happened?
For about 5 minutes, I stood there beside the table without moving. I felt my face flame with a sudden and vicious anger. Then I lit a match and lit the sheet of paper in my hand. The ashes fell slowly, piece by piece, and I brushed them from the windowsill into the air. I watched as they floated away on the summer wind that breathed so warmly over the world.
John, I want you to try to remember.
I quietly looked about the room, and then I did a curious thing. I took a heavy stick from a rack in the corner and shattered the mantel clock to pieces. Shut up! Shut your lying voice forever! There's no such thing as time! I took off my watch and smashed it against the wall. I grappled with the research skeleton hanging in the corner and hurled it at the bodies of the destroyed timepieces. Let one cursed fraud hang upon another, delusions both, and as cruel as you are false. This went on for at least a quarter of an hour. I stopped at the bookcase where stood a row titled The Scriptures of the World. They were the professor's most treasured possession. One by one, I hurled the books through the open window. The dreams of a devil! A devil's foolish dreams! I'm not sure how long it was until I heard a gunshot that seemed to wake me up, and then I saw you, Doctor.
How are you, Alex?
The pallor of his face was ghastly, Clara, but I'm certain the experiment was a success. The memory of the last 2 hours has been wiped out utterly from your husband's mind.
Thank you, Alex. From both of us.
Let him rest. But when he wakes up, I'm confident you'll find him making jokes and smiling that wry smile that makes us all laugh so heartily. I'll just see myself out.
Clara! Clara!
John? Darling, what is it?
We've been burgled. The entire study has been ransacked.
Well, don't worry, John.
Yes, there's nothing to worry about now. Why don't you sit down, John?
Alex, what are you doing here?
We bumped into each other outside, and I was just inviting him in for a coffee.
Well, thank goodness you're both okay. I must have put my head down for a nap. Thankfully, it doesn't look as though the culprits went into any rooms other than the studies. Did either of you see anyone leaving the apartment?
No, I'm afraid not.
They must have been wildly drunk, whoever they were.
John...
I can't understand it.
Why don't you get Clara out of here, John? Stay at a motel tonight. I can deal with the police and fill in any reports.
I think that's a splendid idea.
If you're sure, Alex. Won't the police want to hear from me?
Likely not. It's just a routine case of vandalism for them.
Well, we'd sure appreciate it.
Of course we will. I'll meet you outside, darling. I'll just grab us an overnight kit.
All right, darling. Thanks again, Alex.
Yes, thank you, Alex.
Don't mention it.
What are you going to do?
Oh, I'll probably tidy up the study. Make it as though the police have been here. Of course, they'll find nothing missing and classify it as a common case of vandalism.
The study? Well, that reminds me, the tablets are still in there, Alex. Do you think...
No, I don't. And you're a fool if you do. You'll see. I'll take them with me and smash them to pieces once I'm far enough away from John.
And if you can't? If they're indestructible, as the professor said?
Then I'll bury them somewhere safe and sound, where they're not likely to bother anyone again, least of all John.
Thank you, Alex. I'll just run upstairs and grab that overnight bag.
Hello. Operator? Get me the university. Lincoln 97573, yes. That's right. The Department of Ancient Languages, please. I need to have something... translated.
The Man Who Found Out was adapted for radio by Peter Church from the original story by Algernon Blackwood and performed by Claire Armstrong, John Fleming, Marie Jones, Andrew Knowlton, and Scott Watkins, with original music by Paul Crocker. Radio Project X is a copyrighted production, and all rights are reserved by its creators, Peter Church, Sean Wayne Doyle, and Neil Jones. For more information, please contact our website at radioprojectx.com or contact us at info@radioprojectx.com.